Hello, my name is Cornell Green, and I am the Failure Guy. Welcome to the podcast. On this episode of the Failure Guy podcast, my guest is Jody Webb. Jody, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the conversation.
Thank you, Cornell. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. So, as I like to do for those out in podcast land, I mean, by now they all know me, but I like to give my guests an opportunity to introduce themselves and just say a little bit about who they are, and if I may ask, what had you choose to decide to be a guest here on the Failure Guy podcast?
Well, my name's Jody Webb, and I live in the great state of Louisiana. And I chose to be on here. It resonated with me. The idea of we all have moments where we fail. And then it's how we come back from that. One of my favorite quotes and just favorite people of all time is Muhammad Ali, who said, it doesn't matter how many times you fall down, it's how many times you get up. And so just hearing you explain what the program is, I felt like it would be a good outing for me and something that might be able to help a few people, because been in that area, fell all the way to the bottom and have to work back all the way up.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. And yes, because you know, Jody and I do know each other from an online community that we are part of called Herd Ventures. And I too understand what it is to literally hit rock bottom, to go all the way down from success to the nadir of existence, and to have to build your way back up from, well, not from nothing, because nothing is the final end. We haven't hit that far down. And as you know, I have FAILURE expand as an acronym that is First Attempts in Learning Using Real Experience. And whereas most of my guests haven't fallen as far as you and I have in our lives, you know, that's some real experience, you know, definitely. So before we get into that, I noticed that your appellation there is Coach Webb. So what is the story about that? And I noticed that I have it should be just the word coach in
right
thing, but okay, whatever, there it is. I'm not going to stop now. Again, hey, I failed to do it correctly, so certainly on brand.
There we go, we are on track. Well, I've got, in order to explain that, I have to tell you, this is probably one of the favorite stories ever of my life, because I was and am still a fan of the movie Freaky Friday. Are you familiar with it?
Yes, it's been a minute since I've seen it. That's like I say, I get whiplash from the flashback. I remember the original. I know they've done a remake, but yeah. I am old enough to remember the original version.
Well, I was going on the original. Yeah, so this really did happen on a Friday. I was a student and graduate of the University of Central Arkansas. Go Bears! Scottie Pippen was one of my classmates while
wow.
I was here. Yeah. And I was bound and determined and headed straight for a career in politics. I worked for the state government. I worked for the state auditor. I even had a few brushes with former President Bill Clinton, which was awesome. I got to be there on the day that he left the Capitol there in Little Rock and got on what would be Air Force One, headed towards Washington, D.C., and so while I was working there in the auditor's office, my very best friend was working through his student teach, and he needed a guest speaker. It was right during election time, and so it was midterms, and so he was like, I need a speaker. You want to come represent the Democratic Party? I'm like, well, heck yeah. and so I went to his class and did exactly that, was speaking on, you know, what was going on. Actually, I spoke about the election as a whole, because I didn't want it just to be one-sided.
Right.
And I'll be doggone, like, it felt like lightning struck, Cornell. I knew when I left that classroom, I knew exactly what I was supposed to do.
Wow.
And that was to get into teaching. My best friend, Brian, he was the teacher. He went into state government. So, he went on to be a director in the state government on the education side. And so.
Right. Wow. Okay. I get the Freaky Friday resonance. You went in as someone aspiring to be a politician assist someone who was aspiring to be a teacher. And then you became a teacher and he became the politician.
Right. Well, not so much of a politician, but he definitely was working
But went into politics, yes.
Yeah, there was definitely politics involved. So, yeah, and I did that and coaching football for 26 years, retired 2 years ago, but I'm still Coach Webb because I am. That's just who I've been for 26 years, and I still do some personal coaching and trying to get more into that. So, that's pretty much how that came about and continued. I had a pretty successful run of it, I must say, and enjoyed it to the full extent.
Okay. Now, coaching, especially athletic coaching, I was the nerdy bookworm in my academic life, so never actually played any competitive sports. Not really a sportsman kind of person, you know. Coaching is kind of fascinating. So at what level did you coach football and where did you coach football during your career?
Well, I started in Little Rock. I was still there when I decided to make the change. And that was at the community level. So I've been like at the YMCA. Then I went into junior high. I actually, in my third year of volunteer coaching, came within 10 points of winning the city championship.
Wow.
And I was pretty proud of that. Pretty proud of that. And then moved on up to the high school level and was just off to the races. That's as far as I ever got. Honestly, that's really as far as I ever wanted to get, even more so now, because there's that developmental thing.
Yes.
I actually loved teaching or coaching junior high football because it was all fundamental. It was all developmental. It was all about, you know, helping getting these young men to find out that they were actually better at something than they thought they were. Also helping them on the academic side. And I just got to see that further. And, had some pretty proud moments when I was teaching in Westside High School in Jonesboro, Arkansas. The first athlete in 20 years, I helped him make it to the next level to go play college. So they had been really good in the 80s, like 85, 86, and hadn't done really much anything since then. And so nobody at Westside High School thought about playing in college until I came along.
Okay.
And the young man came to me after practice one day. He's like, "Can you really help me with that?" And I said, "You bet I can." And 2 weeks later, we were at a football camp and he gave everything he gave, just like, you know, when he was preparing for a game, and they picked him up.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Now, you know, I have relatives that have done, football or some, you know, athletics especially during, you know, middle school and high school. And, we see lots of movies and TV shows. It's kind of established that, unlike, say, college, going into pro, then the focus is on the competitive aspect of it and qualifying and going out there. And especially like we see a lot of scandals in NCAA. It tends to be about money and bringing in, you know, donations from things. But at the level before that, as you said, you're really involved in the fundamentals of these young people becoming the people that they're going to be. And I've always had the sense that there's something, yes, of course, you want to win your games and beat the other team. But there are layers and elements to it that aren't about just the competition. It's about the sort of person you are. I mean, we see a lot, and that's why a lot of people like me who aren't athletic at all, but we love those movies because it's about the honor. It's about integrity. It's about teamwork. It's about, you know, collaboration. And I'm sure that's a lot of what you experienced in your career. If you could just speak to that a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much that goes into it. I've had friends, and even my wife, she's like, I never knew it took that much to be able to organize, plan, and prepare and win a football game. She said, I had no idea what was involved in all of that. And I don't think a lot of people do. I mean, you get to see a little bit of the behind the scenes in some of the movies. You know, I mean, a lot of that is true. You know, the coaches have to work together. The coaches have to work with the kids. The kids have to work together. I mean, it is a real undertaking to be able to win and win consistently. But like you said, but to also produce, you know, the kind of young man that you want to see out in the community. Mm. That's so important because, like me, I'm going to be honest with you. I was actually a better coach than I was a player. I was not that good of a player at all. I was an offensive lineman. I was defensive lineman. I was okay. You know, I could go in a situation and be helpful. But, man, where I had it was here. Mm, you know, I had the size. Okay. I had the ability. If I'd had some individual coaching, I think I would have been, you know, on up. But I didn't really think about that. Right. But in terms of the smarts and putting it all together, that's where it's at. I mean, it really is. I'm trying to think of who the former coach of the San Francisco 49ers. It just escaped my head. But he said it was like a chess match. That's exactly right. It's like a chess match, and you got to get the right pieces. One of my sayings a lot in coaching is, you need to be the right person at the right time at the right place, doing the right thing, and right things will happen.
Yes,
because if you follow our coaching, if you stick with the plan, if you go through the, you know, what we've done in practice, and you don't try to be, you know, I'm going to do it my way. You're a lot more likely to be successful. I'll tell you another one, and people may be surprised by this. Jerry Rice is and probably always will be the greatest receiver of all time. Mm. Came out of a little school nobody had ever really heard of at the time, Mississippi Valley State University. But Jerry was not the fastest dude on the field, hardly ever. Mm. Jerry ran his routes like a king. No one, I mean, Jerry was just, I go this far, I hit it, and I go. And he just did it. He was disciplined, and he just did it better than anybody else. And he got the results for it.
Literally the right person. Right. Okay.
At the right time, doing the
right thing.
Right thing. And they got the right results.
Yes.
And you see that a lot. And also you'll see that guys who do follow the program, and I'll get back more on that here in just a second, but the guys that do follow the program stay in football longer. I mean, look at Tom Brady. No one has ever played that position that long.
Yeah.
And you know why?
Even I know about Tom Brady.
And you know why?
Why?
Because he followed the program. He knew exactly what needed to be done to maintain the level of health, the level of sharpness, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what it takes. And you get to be the greatest of all time when that happens.
Right. So when you say follow the program, you're not just talking about the plays and the run book or whatever. So you're talking about the whole package of the whole human being. Wow, that's very fascinating.
Yeah, you see, Cornell, there are schools that play football, and there are schools that have a football program. And I'm going to call one out here in Louisiana. That school is Edna Carr. They made I believe it was Netflix documentary about that team. That's how good they are.
Wow.
The team out in California, I can't think of their name. They made a movie about them. It's called For Love of the Game. They had been undefeated for like 70 something games and then lost their first one. And that's where that movie starts.
Wow.
You know? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Because they had a program, and then, you know, as things change, you have to adapt your program to what's changing.
Right. Right. You know, and especially if you have a successful program, eventually part of being a competitor is figuring out your program and figuring out how to defeat it if you want to win. So you constantly have to adapt to them adapting to what you've done.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, Jody, you mentioned something in talking about coaching, you know, you're thinking about the type of young man that you want to have in your community. And I wonder how many people think about the relationship between sports and building, not just building the community of the athletes, but building people to grow, to be part of the community in which they live.
Yeah. Well, you know, and this is a good time of year to be talking about that because, you know, all of the football guys are off. They're back into training camp now. But they still have a little leeway here and there. All the basketball guys are now off. You know, they'll be back in Cactus League or whatever they call theirs. You know, getting ready for their season again. But I don't know if you've ever paid attention or seen how when these guys go back to their community, the level of attention and the just admiration for them is just through the roof. You know, we've got a guy who graduated from, if you didn't know where Blanchard, Louisiana is, you know, he is from Blanchard. He is not from Shreveport.
Okay.
He is from Blanchard, Louisiana. He went to North Caddo High School and made it all the way to the NBA. Played for the Celtics, just recently got traded. And let me tell you something. He is one of the nicest people. He came down about 3 years ago. He came down to do a camp, and he does it every year. But 3 years ago, he did a little extra. The town of Blanchard was celebrating their birthday or something like that. And he stopped his camp to go over to where the, you know, where the celebration was, just to give a shout out to the town that, you know, brought him up as a young man, you know, and helped send him on to the next level. And like, man, Shreveport, dude, they're, I mean, the most probably recognized, one of the most recognized broadcasters is from Shreveport, Terry Bradshaw.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Four time Super Bowl winning quarterback, MVP, Karl Malone.
Yep. There you go. Another one.
Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
And there was a dude. Wait, now we're going way back. Okay. And I'm going to give my little guilty pleasure. The big cat, Ernie Ladd Grambling University, who went
Grambling.
on to become a not only a ferocious football player, but one of the best bad guys in wrestling ever. Right from right down the road.
Okay.
So I mean, and it's just like, if Drew Brees shows up in Bossier, they're just about going to shut the town down.
Wow.
It's
Wow.
that it's that level. So what do you want to see? What do you want to see from that kind of person? And I'll even go with another one who's huge, who's not a football player, not from Louisiana, John Cena.
Oh yeah, oh my gosh, yes.
How many people would line up to see John
Yes.
Cena?
Yes, definitely.
And here's the great thing that goes right with the, your show. He's not perfect.
True. True.
He's made some mistakes, but he was human enough and humble enough to say, you know what? I did make that mistake and I'm sorry, and I'm going to prove it to you by not ever doing it again.
Right,
You know,
right.
that's what you want to see,
Yes.
you know.
Yes. And you raise an interesting point, Jody. I mean, unfortunately, like I say, as not a very big sports guy, if a celebrity, if a not a celebrity, but if an athlete comes to my attention, it's usually for all of the wrong reasons. It's the scandals, it's the
Right.
run-ins with the law and these sorts
Right.
of things. But for every one of those that the media chooses to focus on, there is what, 10, 100 who are like the ones you're talking about, who go back to their communities, who give back to their communities, who stay humble, who always appreciate not only the gift that it is that they have received whatever success they have, but they go back to where it came from, to the community that
Right.
molded them, that gave them the fundamentals, not just of the game, whether it be basketball, football, baseball, or whatever, but that gave them the fundamentals of the core of the person that they are, which enabled them to find whatever success and, on brand here, to overcome whatever failures they may have achieved on the way, to not quit, to not give up, to not make excuses, to not blame somebody else, but to dig deep, and like you said, the Muhammad Ali quote, no matter how many times they fell down, to get back up, dust themselves off, and keep pursuing their goal. And I think it's so
Yeah.
important in this conversation. I think in the global conversation, the conversation we're having with ourselves as a nation, here in 2026 as we're recording this, to honor and to celebrate the integrity, the good ones, as they say, the people who do more than expected, who give back, and particularly who also give back silently. Unless you were in
Right.
those communities, you wouldn't know. They don't bring an entourage with them. They don't bring
No.
a for the photo op. They go there to honestly give back to where they came from because they know there's another crop of coming up. There's another generation of young people like they were that young person. And they want to see that that community remains a proving grounds and a meadow, a field, if you will, that can, nurture other
Right.
people just like them.
Well, I mean, look at what's happening right now in the United States. We're hosting the World Cup,
Yes,
and
yes.
oh, 64 teams came coming to this country or parts close to it, and there can only be one winner.
True.
And I love over the past week or so, there have been several countries. And it's so wild because, they're this is the first time that they've ever scored.
Wow.
They've been coming for years, and this is the first time they've ever scored. And that's a victory,
Yes,
Cornell.
to score at
That is
all.
a victory. They beat a team that they were the underdog story. My favorite, because I was one. I was an underdog,
Yes.
Love the underdog story, and so does everybody else. Even though, what was it? Co Ivory Coast lost the other day against the world champion Argentina. The dude that played goalkeeper for Ivory Coast got 35 million new followers on
Wow.
his. Yeah,
Wow.
35 million. I mean, most people
That's
say,
amazing.
"Oh, you lost." Like, no, I didn't. We
Right.
just didn't,
Right. The
They were
heart, the
just
heart.
better than us on that
Yeah.
day. We, I
Yeah.
mean, we, but we, look at what we that we had them. They had them on the road. It was 2-2, and they
Yes.
had to go all. I mean, severious
Right. You played
overtime.
the champions of the world in this sport to
Right.
overtime. Of course, they
Right.
beat you because that's why
Right.
they're the world champions.
That's
But
why they're
it
the
wasn't
world
a rout.
champion.
It was.
But just to see that. Now, watch this, Cornell. How many fights have there been?
In the World Cup,
Yeah.
I haven't heard of any. I'll be honest, I haven't been following it, but I haven't heard of any scandals of any. I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about WNBA, that's a whole other
No,
conversation.
that's no, I don't want. I'm talking, we're in a
Yes.
moment here
Yes.
where basically the entire world that can
Yes.
is coming together, and
Yes.
there has been zero.
Yes.
Zero. I mean,
Yes.
there have been some confrontations and some,
Well, that's the nature of sport,
it's competitiveness, but
but the
no
true
shootings.
spirit of sportsmanship, that's what it's about.
Right.
And as I like to remind
Exactly. And
people, the original Rocky film, right? The
right.
very first one.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, a
Think
lot of
about it
people
all the
forget
time.
two things. First of all, it won the Oscar for the best picture of that year. And he lost,
Right.
but he
That's
won.
right. That's
You
right.
know, because he's like, look, I'm not gonna win against the heavyweight champion of the world. Are you kidding me? I'll be lucky if I'm still standing. He was still standing after 15 rounds, and he was a broken guy who had potential, but he was like a leg breaker for a third-rate asthmatic wannabe mafiosa guy.
Right,
He was
right.
so shy that here's Adrian. You know, and he's like spending a week trying to think of a corny joke just to make her laugh. Now, this guy, this brute of a guy, doesn't even have the courage to ask her out. And the victory at the end is that they found each other, and through their love, these two, you might want to say, broken people, but in finding love, they fit together, and that was the victory. And the other movies, yeah, Hollywood did what it did. It's like, okay, now, because the other people forget the other movies were sports movies. But Rocky was not a sports movie. Even
No.
though it was about boxing, it was about the human soul. And that's
Right.
what made it the greatest of the entire series. That's why it won the Oscar,
Right.
because it was about true sportsmanship and what you get out of. It's not just about winning or losing, it's about what you get, what you discover about yourself in the process.
Yep. I completely agree.
Yeah. Now, of course, we're here. The program is called The Failure Guy. And so not everybody has to discuss a crushing failure, but of course, there is an experience that you've had in your life, which was what resonated with you. And you said, you know what, I think I'm going to go on this program and talk about it. First of all, I always thank and I don't say congratulate, but I'm sure a lot of people look at the title of this podcast and are like, "The what? The failure guy?" Like some people, when I ask them, like, why are you asking me to be in a program called The Failure Guy? What are you trying to say?" And my friends, you know, we all have that brain trust, that group of close friends. And when I first in 2017 shared with my little brain trust that I was going to start a podcast of this title, you'd have thought I was just about to jump off the roof of a 20-story building. They're like, no, Corn, I mean, I understand the concept, but no, don't call it failure guy. What are you doing? You can't call it that. Failure guy? No way. It's like, Cornell, don't jump. And I said, you see the way you're reacting just to the word failure? That's why I have to call it the failure guy. Because you're just hearing about it. And so many of us, either we don't even try because we're afraid that we'll fail, or we experience one failure and then they just give up. And their lives could have been better. It's like all you had to do, like you said, pick yourself up and try again. But the lesson they take away from it is, oh, well, that's it. See, I can't win. I can't succeed. Might as well just settle for whatever comes my way. And I want to demystify and demythify that concept. And I want to inspire people to not be defeated. Because, like I say, failure is only defeat if you quit. And you certainly
Right.
didn't quit. And I admire anyone that's going to come on something that's going to be broadcast to the world and talk about an experience of failure in their life. And obviously, this has been a very wordy preamble to say, let's talk about your experiences.
All right. Well, basically, I think the best thing I could say is I was very stubborn. And there were a lot of circumstances related to the choice. I got to the point where I was making some bad choices. I was not being the man that I wanted to be. I was not being the man that I wanted my students and players to see and emulate. And a lot of it came because I was being stubborn and I wouldn't. And I'm so glad that now there's more of a push of people talking about men's health, men's mental health
Oh,
specifically.
yes.
You
Yes.
know, and I think I know it was one of the worst moments in our human history, at least in the United States, you know, was seeing the result of 9/11,
Yes.
seeing men, very popular, very, he's this tough guy, you know, wow, you know, respect, cry on national TV. That was an amazing moment. That was a major shift in culture because men just did not talk about their problems. They just don't.
Yes. Yes.
And so, and I'm one of them. I chose, you know, well, I'm successful. You know, I'm successful in school. I was fairly popular. I had a lot of friends, you know, but behind the scenes, I was suffering. And there weren't too many, you sure as heck couldn't have got me to do this back then. You know, just don't talk about it. You just, you go towards the areas. And so, you know, I did actually, get into therapy, but it didn't click. At that time, I wasn't in the right mental space. I wasn't in the right thought process. And I wasn't doing anything wrong or mean or horrible at that time. It's just, I wouldn't deal with the issues. I had some family pain and, you know, issues like that. And I just refused to deal with it because I didn't want to. I'm like, I can just push that. No, you can't. You can't just push that to the side. It haunts you. It stays with you. And so but I did. I pushed it to the side, tried to do it myself. Lord have mercy. How many times, you know, and the success, you know, having that success at work and on the football field just made it that much easier
To
to
cover it up, to
ignore it,
mask it, to hide
to
it.
cut right. And it just, and I'm gonna say it this way. I could not love myself.
Oh, yeah. There you are. There you are.
I was told and I was treated until the age of 18 that I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't going to amount to anything. And as many times as I said to myself, yes, I am, I never really believed it. I let that person get in my head and put a block in my head to where I didn't believe that I could be successful in a loving relationship. I was successful everywhere else. You would never have guessed unless you were really paying attention. And so I went on and just kept trying to do it myself, kept trying to do it myself. Ended up in a situation where I was homeless.
Wow.
I made some really bad decisions in my dating life, and I was lying to both people. You hear who's taking responsibility? Me. I was lying to both people and to myself, and of course, they both exploded.
Yeah.
And I remember pulling over in my car with about $50 to my name after this is after about 2 weeks of living in my car, because I didn't
Wow.
have anywhere to go at
Wow.
that point, didn't have enough money to stay in a hotel, and taking my phone out and saying, "Mom, I need to come home. I have really screwed it up. Would it be okay if I came home and tried to put it all back together?" And she said, of course, she said yes. And we worked out an agreement and everything. But that night, in the middle of the night, no kidding, drove back to Monroe, Louisiana, and stayed with my mom. And her main two things that I will never forget, and I'm so thankful for, was she said, "If this is going to work, you're going to go back to church." And you know what I said? You know what I said, Cornell?
What did you say, Jody?
Yes, ma'am.
There you go. There you go.
And when I went back to church, I found a group, a program called Celebrate Recovery. Give all the if you're in the belief, if you believe in God and you believe in Jesus and the Bible, and you're having trouble, like I did. So it's called Celebrate Recovery. There's one in every at least mid-sized town.
Okay.
But they have one side that does alcohol, and then they have another side that does habits, hurts, and hang-ups. That's
Oh.
anything, yeah,
Okay.
like family issues,
Right.
personal issues, things like I had never really had. I'm not going to tell you I never completely had a problem with alcohol, but I was past that.
Right.
Alcohol was not the reason
That was
why I was,
not the major issue.
no, that was pretty much done by the time that I got back to my mom's house.
Right.
It was those things from my past that I had refused to deal with. And so we had, and here's the more scary part, honestly, for me, was that the program divides it between men and women. And the person who hurt me when I was a child were men. And so here I am in a room, and I'm supposed to trust 12 other people with my deepest, darkest secrets. And I had to, and of course, I had to trust Jesus. I had tried everything else. Grew up in church, Cornell. I was in the youth, I was the assistant director for the youth choir before I graduated high school. I mean, you couldn't have asked for a more church-going involved kid, But I never fully trusted Jesus to take away, to give, those habits, hurts, and hang-ups to. And so over those months, it was, hot, anger, gnashing of teeth, rah, rah,
Yes, yes.
It hurts, but we got through it. And we got through it together. Now, I want to fast forward from there, if you don't mind, because that is the point where my book starts.
Okay. Now, before we get into that, I'd just like to interject, and then of course I definitely want to get into your book. But you raise so many relevant and pertinent issues. It's been almost like a recurring theme particularly in the last few conversations that I've had here on the podcast. I've been saying since the end of last year, then this is the summer of 2026 as we record this, that we need safe spaces for men so that the world does not need safe spaces from men.
I like it.
You know, and you speak so honestly and truthfully to the fact that as men, we are not only not taught how to process our emotions, we are taught to either repress or ignore them, push them away, push them down. And in the context of the failure guy, as men, we are taught that vulnerability is weakness.
Yep.
And so I can't say to someone, I've got a problem. What kind of man are you? Man up. Walk it off. Be a man. Stiff upper lip. Square jawed. You know, all of this nonsense. We're human beings, of course. And I find it just so, well, I don't want to say typical, but that it was your mother. It was that feminine energy. And those who have listened to the podcast has heard me say many times of the significance that my mother was in my life. You know, I was raised basically by the women in my life. My mother, her older sister, my older sister, my mother's mother, and my mother's mother's mother. You know, and I be by being raised by these influences. Now, I had men in my life, my mother's brothers, my uncles, I had many cousins, you know, my stepfather, who my mom met when I was 9, she married when I was 12, and he was her husband and the father of my youngest brother. You know, he passed in 1992. But I say I was raised as a human being and not as this stereotype, because there's two things. Like, you know, what we were talking about in the earlier conversation, what it is to be a good man, as in a good male person, through sports, through collaboration, through community, honor, integrity, you know, and then this stereotype we have in our community of manliness and machismo and all of this nonsense. It's garbage, and it destroys us. And in destroying us, since, let's face it, men are the dominators of the world. We're physiologically stronger. We're you know, testosterone, not estrogen, is the leading hormone in our bodies. And we tend to be, if you don't go to line, you know, I'm going to get my way, or I'm going to make you go my way. But we're all scared. We're all scared. The most macho guy, the biggest bully, you get inside his mind, you get with him in the dark, and he's just as scared. In fact, that's why he's got to strike first, okay? Because he's afraid, if I can't let them see, I'm afraid. So I have to make them afraid first, you know? And what it takes to confront that is, and obviously you've been through that, and now your book. Let's get into that conversation.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, there's more than one way. You've got to find the way that works best for you.
Yes.
Yes. But I do feel like it's important. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say you have to go to therapy in order to get through these issues, but it helps. But it is, like, I have friends. I don't hunt. That's my non-manly thing. I find no interest in it at, you know,
I see, and let me jump in there. It's cool for those who do hunt, especially those who hunt for sport, because I'm sure, especially where you are out there in Louisiana, in that part of the world, there are people who hunt and they eat what they kill. Hunt. Whatever, but then there's those, again, it's that macho nonsense. I'm gonna date, you know. All right, so you're gonna have this high-powered weapon, and you know, it's not like you're going up to that you know 12-point buck with a Bowie knife and taking it down. So what does that prove? And then these idiot, you know, safari guys who go to Africa and they're gonna kill an endangered species and to take home a lion pelt or take home elephant horns. What are you doing? Again, you're a little boy who's scared, so you think, I'm gonna kill a big thing, and that's gonna make me a man. So you're not manly because you don't hunt. You're a man who chooses not to hunt for macho reasons. Since you're not gonna hunt to feed your family, why would you be hunting?
Right. I mean, like I said, I just the idea of getting up at 4:30 a.m. to go out and sit in, 12-degree weather, wait, hoping that a deer might walk through my path. It just does not appeal to me. I've got a really nice warm bed.
Yes.
And if that's not enough, I've got a really nice wife laying next
Oh,
to
there you
me.
go. All the more reason.
All the more why,
Yes. And
So
if you
anyway.
really want to be a man, stay there and take care of your wife. That's
Right.
manly.
Right, exactly. Do something together. But yeah,
So we're talking about
I
your
don't
book.
yeah, I was the title of the book is The Power in the Presence of the Holy Spirit.
Okay.
And the impetus behind this book was several things. One, as I told you, I've been in church all my life. I mean,
Yes.
all my life, with a
Yes.
few years there where I was just kind of like, you know what? I'm good. I don't need church. I don't need God. I'm just gonna, I'm gonna be a good person and not hurt people and not do bad things and just kind of enjoy the world.
Yeah. Kind of like what
That,
Rumspringa is for the Amish.
yeah,
Yeah.
pretty much. So, but yeah, that didn't last too long. But I was 36 years old before I ever heard any real explanation of the Holy Spirit. And at first I got mad because I've been sitting in churches for all this time and you haven't, and it's part of their doctrine. And you haven't talked about this. And I
Right.
ran home immediately. This was, ran home immediately. And for the next few months, I was looking up everything I could and finding every verse and stuff like that. And then it just started kind of coming to me. And I don't know, I can't actually point to other than the fact that, I'd been through that experience with Celebrate Recovery, that I got this idea of writing a book. Because I was like, maybe I'm 100% sure. I'm not the only one who's been through this experience. And so I started doing the research and all that and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And I was also going through, I got my master's in ministry around that time. So lots of reading, lots of work going on there. But again, and I don't know why, Cornell, I wish I could tell you why I put it off. And I kept putting it off. And I kept putting it off. Well, then COVID came along, and guess what? I had no excuses
Nowhere to go,
anymore.
nothing
This,
but time on
right?
your hands.
N nothing but time on my hands. And so it's like, you know what? I'm gonna finish this book. I had been kind of writing. I was doing some fill in. It was amazing. I got an opportunity to do a radio program here in Shreveport. Yeah. And so because of that experience, I'm like, that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the Holy Spirit because it's so uncovered. And so I would do one a week. And we had timed it out where the title of the program was 6 Weeks to the Holy Spirit, because it was 6 weeks to Pentecost when I started the book. And so it started with, what is the Holy Spirit? What's the role of the Holy Spirit? And then if you read along and you pay attention, it tells you all the roles that the Holy Spirit, the Comforter, the GPS, I mean, it's just can pray for you. It was just really amazing. But what really got me, and this is my other favorite part, was I started coming across people who, sports guys, who were openly talking about their religious experience, And of course, George Foreman.
Yes.
Bang. Now I know you know
Yes.
who George
Yes.
Foreman
Oh, yeah.
is.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
So,
Including this aspect of his life that you're about to talk about.
right. So, George was one of the best, toughest fighters you could ever want to see. I mean, that was some prime boxing right
Yes.
there. Foreman, Ali, all those guys. But
Yes.
I mean, Foreman was just a monster.
Yes.
Even Ali said he didn't want to get hit by him.
No. And then
That's why he.
afterwards, when he came back into boxing, years after that fight, and was quite competitive, at an age when most guys wouldn't even think of lacing up gloves again.
And again, another shift in the culture of you're too old. Well, I
Right.
guess I'm not. I just knocked, I guess I just knocked young boy on his butt there and he ain't getting up.
Yeah.
I'm taking his belt. But, little did people know behind the scenes that he was, also a preacher. And of course
Yes,
he had
yes.
his ministry center there for a long time that got taken away, because of money. And he's like, put it right back into it. And I just kept running across these situations. There was a, I mean, you name it, boxers, runners,
A lot of football guys.
Olympians, a lot of football guys. I mean, I was trying to think, Reggie White, the Minister of Defense. Okay. He was a preacher.
Yes.
And it's just, and, but I kept this book and this research because I didn't want it to be, and it's not all sports guys. I mean, we're
Right.
talking, there was this one dude
Right.
that went from being nearly on death row. This was in California. I can't think of his name right off the
No.
bat, but he went to being from being nearly on death row in California to being a preacher, a minister, a community leader, leading a church, leading a in a neighborhood that no one had the right, I mean, not somewhere you would think. And that's the deal. That's the point. The person that you least expect in the, this is a revision now. The person that you least expect in the place you least expect,
Yes.
doing the
But
most unexpected thing
yes.
leads to unexpected
Unexpected results.
results
Yes, indeed.
that
Yes,
are
indeed.
just inspiring, to say the least.
Yes.
They are inspiring. And I wish I could think of that movie that they made with, I think it was Donnie Wahlberg, where he was in sports and then got into the ministry and got like so sick that they thought he was headed towards death, but
Wow.
he was determined he was going to achieve that goal of being a minister, being ordained before he died. I mean, you
Okay.
talking about boo-hoo, you cry your eyes out, man. It
Wow.
was something. But
Okay.
anyway, the point is, I kept coming across these people like that who are just totally unexpected, and they're out there, I love the fact, one, that they were talking about their relationship with Jesus, their relationship with God, how much it changed them, how really, really real. They weren't putting on a show. They weren't expecting anybody to see them at all. Like
Right.
the dude at the mission in California. He didn't come out looking for He wasn't looking for that notoriety or that
Right.
fame or that. He just, somebody ran across him and was inspired. And so anyway, finished the book right as things were opening up with COVID. I had set my goal. You'll love this. I had set my goal as I was going to finish before my birthday.
Okay.
My birthday's in April. The school shut down in February. They told us we're not coming back in March. So I had through
Right.
my birthday, because like I said, I've been doing a lot of, I had a lot of it written. I just hadn't put it all together.
Right.
So I basically had a month and a half to finish this book, and doggone
Okay.
it, I did it, Cornell. And then I
Okay.
set myself the goal to have it published before the end of that year, and I actually ended up self-publishing on Amazon, and you
Yes,
can get
yes.
it on Amazon. The power and the presence of the Holy Spirit. And I really believe that whether you believe or not, I feel like it's pretty inspiring, because I
Yes.
use real people. I talk about real people who had their life changed through believing and following, what the Bible talks about.
Okay.
And to come bring it all full circle, learning how to love themselves.
Ah, very
Cornell, I
important.
cannot tell you the weight that has been lifted off my shoulder since 2013.
Wow.
I had been wearing a mask all that time.
Wow.
And I can honestly say it probably took a couple more years. I'm gonna say 20, yeah. About 2014, I dropped the mask and was just Jody and was
Okay.
just Coach Webb, because I mean that's just who I am.
Yes.
That's not just a persona,
Right.
somebody I make up and put on a, no, I am Coach Webb. I am Jody Webb,
Yes.
and the weight, Cornell,
Yes.
that came off of
Yes.
my shoulders. And I just want to express this to everyone to let it go.
Yes.
Let go of the mask. Let people see you for who you really
Yes.
are. They will love you. They
Yes.
will, in fact, they might like you more. And what
Yes.
good, I mean, what good is it to be fake? Do you realize how much energy you're spending?
Oh,
How
my
much
gosh.
time you're spending to be this
Yes.
fake person that if I met you in Walmart, I wouldn't know who you were?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
And when you said, Jody, when you said taking off the mask, it really resonated with me. And when you said the release and the relief, because again, as a man, I'm 65 years old, so I grew up in those generations, and I can so relate to the fact that it is a constant, every second of your waking life burden that you have to construct, because we use the term mask as like a thing, but we're not even talking about that. We're talking everything, how you stand, how you move, the tension. Then this, like, people don't realize that there's a physical residual tension, because you're constantly tense that the mask is going to slip, that people are going to see through, that someone's going to figure you out, that they're going to see that you're a fake and a fraud. Did they say the wrong thing? Did you move the wrong way? Did you look the wrong way? What is it? Why is he looking at me like that? What does he mean by that? Well, you, and
It's
it's
exhausting.
insane.
It is exhausting. And like I said, I feel like I've not only lifted that weight off my shoulder, but I feel like I've had so much more of a full life. So much more. Now, I'm gonna be honest, I couldn't mean, it may be a little bit here and there, but I couldn't wear a mask when I was teaching. Kids will figure you out
Oh
real
my God. Oh
quick.
my God. Yes. Yeah. The right
Real
through.
quick.
Right through.
You want to get somebody judged? You want to see if there's red flags? Have them meet a teenager.
Yes.
They'll let you know in a heartbeat, and even younger.
Yes. Yeah.
Even
Oh,
younger, I
especially
mean.
younger, like say 8 to 13. Oh my goodness. But then, as it says, accept that you be like this little child.
That makes I gotta share this story with you right quick. I was teaching here in Shreveport at middle school, and one day I got this phone call. Is this Mr. Dale? The parents always call me Mr. Webb. Is this Mr. Webb? I'm like, yes, it is. And she said, I was just wondering if I could make an appointment with you. I'm like, sure. No problem. When would you like to come? Is that was the one year that I didn't teach or coach football while I was teaching. And so we made an appointment, and she came up, and I said, introduce myself, and she did the same, and I said, how can I help you here? How can I help you here today? What can I do? And she said, I just had to come meet you because my child, Nathan, has never, ever talked about their social studies teacher before. And he came home talking about Coach Webb this and Coach Webb that. And I just had to come see for myself who you are.
Who is this Coach Webb guy?
Who is this Coach Webb? And see, it's exactly what you were talking about earlier of creating a safe space for people
Yes.
like for
Yes.
him. Everybody saw him, and I heard the teachers talk, so I know this to be true. Bad news. Oh, you're gonna have Nathan this year. You better be ready. Okay. Me and Nathan had a great relationship.
Right.
Great, great relationship. To where he knew that if he needed to talk, he could come and talk to me and that I would actually listen. But my agreement, Cornell, with every one of my students, whether they were athlete or athletes got no breaks, by the way. In fact, I held them to a higher standard. But every single one of my students, I said, you can come talk to me. I promise you can come talk to me. And unless it's something in the state rule book that says, if you tell me
Right.
like I'm
Right.
gonna kill myself or I'm gonna kill somebody else,
Yeah.
I have to tell. Otherwise, it's just you and me. I
Right.
said, but here's the deal. If you come ask me a question, I'm going to tell you the truth.
Ah.
Now, you may not like it, so you better be prepared
Right.
for the
Right.
answer. And they appreciated that,
Yeah.
they
'Cause you treated
appreciated it.
them with respect and you treated them as a person,
Right, because I don't
not
know you. I don't
right.
know about your background, and I am not required to. When you step into my when you step into my classroom, it's you and me. That's it. When you step into my world, it's you and me. I don't know much about you, Cornell, but you're
True.
part of my world now.
Yes, yes.
And
And
I trusted with you not knowing hardly a doggone thing about you, except for the fact that you're with a bunch of great people and you're one
yes.
of them, and I want to be
Yes.
part of it.
Yes, indeed. And
So,
first of all, thank you so much. I do feel honored and privileged for you saying that, you personally and everyone who comes on the podcast, because to trust somebody who's running a conversation about failure, calling himself the failure guy, and asking you pointedly, talk about a failure in your life. And as I have on the intake form, a significant failure in your life with a total stranger. That takes a certain amount of trust, which I do not take for granted. I do not take lightly. And I honor and respect that. So I thank you for saying that.
Well, it's 100% the truth.
Yes. So in these closing moments, Jody, if you have any final statements, and I'm going to ask, usually I just leave it at the person, but I'm going to say, especially given the conversation I've been having recently in this one, talk to the men who will be listening to this podcast in conclusion.
Give me a minute.
Certainly. Certainly.
I just want to say this. At the age of 13, from the age of 13 to the age of 18, I was beat, brutalized, talked down to, made fun of. Any other thing you want to add to that of the worst behavior, worst treatment a person could get from who the person who my mother had married and was supposed to be protecting me. That did not happen. And the only way that I had to work, scrape, claw to get away from that. And today I call myself a world-class problem solver. And the reason I finally had to go back to, where did that come from? Because that's not my mom. And I'm the oldest, so it's not my brother and sister. And it's not anybody else really in my family. So how did I become a world-class problem solver? And the way that I did that, I got that gift from having to avoid the abuser. I had to be very creative in staying out of his sight and staying away from his hands, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I just want to say this. The longer you wait to talk about it, the longer you wait to try to let it go, the heavier and heavier it gets. And I'll be honest with you, the thing that scared me most was that I would end up just like him. And I refused to do that. Now, here's the other honesty. I refused to the point where I never had kids. But I really did end up having kids because I taught and coached over 4,500 young people,
yes,
and helped them get to the next level in their life and tried my best to show them the kind of man that I was hoped that they would be. And so I say to you today, two things. Let it go. Get help. Find someone, anyone. I don't care if it's your hunting lodge, whatever, I don't care who it is, please find someone to talk to and let it go. Let that weight come off of you and just feel how much better life can be. And I also encourage you to seek God, to seek Jesus, to allow him to keep his promise of sending his Holy Spirit to wrap around you, comfort you, guide you, and help you have the most amazing life you can ever imagine. Amen.
Jody, I'd just like to thank you in closing for sharing so openly and honestly. I have to say, I've done almost 40 podcast conversations, and this has to be the most moving that I've had. You know, I feel privileged and honored that people come and have these conversations with me and trust enough to open, and we're going to share this with the world, And it's not me. I can take no credit for it. And I see that it's the conversation I'm supposed to be having, because I said I've been in the context of this. You know, we need safe spaces for men, so we don't need safe spaces from men. I have been intimidated about even saying that out loud, because it's too awesome a task for me to imagine taking upon myself. But it isn't me. I'm not going to do it alone. No one's going to do it alone. And one of the things that you know from being Coach Webb is that it takes a community. No man is an island. No one does it by themselves. It is impossible to do that. We belong in community. As human beings, we're designed to be in communities, in loving, supporting, healthy community. And just in closing, I want to say to you, because I myself am childless for different reasons, but kind of the same result. And I will just put it to you this way. You didn't have offspring so that you could have over 4,000 children and be a blessing to them all.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for being Coach Webb. Thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen in the podcast world, as you can see, I'm seriously moved. And I will say to you, as I always say in closing, remember, life is not a competition. Life is not about wearing a mask or putting up a front. The only person that you have to compete with is the person that you were the day before. And remember, as Jody reminds us, it's not how many times that you fall, it's how many times you get back up. You know, life is not a race, you know, with against anyone else. It's not a competition. It's just getting up the next day and taking the next step. So remember, keep running. Never quit. Failure is only a defeat if you give up. And until then, I will see you again in the next conversation. Remember that the next one is always the best one. Take care, be blessed, and keep trying.